This is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman.
This is Lauren Lester, the voice of Robin and Nightwing.
And you're listening to the DCAU Review,
hosted by Cal and Liam,
streaming at DCAUReview.com
and on your favorite podcast app.
Gotham City is out of control.
An entire city screaming in fear.
Supervillains walk the streets, preying on the innocent.
They will learn the true nature of power.
The police are powerless. A creature prowls this urban wasteland.
Who's that?
He moves in darkness. For some, he is a rumor. A name whispered in the corridors of the underworld, waiting for the chance to strike. Let every criminal know the acid taste of fear.
You crazy!
Bat! Giant bat!
Gotham has forgotten what justice means. The Dark Knight is here to remind them.
Who are you?
Batman. Good guys wear black.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 285 of the DCAU Review. I am one of your hosts, Cal. With me, my good friend, good brother, the man that runs all of our social media accounts. It's Liam. Liam, we have turned the page. We are fresh out of spooky season. And now, here in the States, we're headed towards Turkey Town, which I don't think is a saying at all. But I just coined it. So we're headed towards Turkey Town and everything that comes with the end of the year. So, yes, as we step into the month of November here, we are excited to discuss the original show that we nearly 6 years ago now set off on this journey about discussing with Batman, the animated series. And we are picking things up where we left off last, just a few months ago, with a season 2 ? 3 episode?
According to the Blu-rays, we are on season 2, disc 2. So, at least in production order, this is season 2. Where it aired exactly is always kind of a mystery. We have the Adventures of Batman and Robin intro, which tells me this aired later on in the run. But who knows?
That's right. We are reviewing today, Liam, the episode, I would say, very controversial, and certainly, as we mentioned last week, not one of my faves growing up, the episode Baby Doll, which has an incredible dynamic duo as far as our director and writer. It's a Paul Dini penned episode, as we'll get into here, and very interested to hear our thoughts, see if they've changed as we've grown, if our thoughts on this episode have changed at all. But before we do, of course, we're going to go through our rundown. We're going to get our official IMDb synopsis and all of that. And just a reminder, no new review this week, no new 5-star review for many of the listeners. But if you do leave a 5-star review, we will read one at the end of our episode. And if we read yours and you live within the continental United States, we'll be happy to send you a little prize and as a thank you for taking the time to do so. So if you have time this week and you would like to leave a 5-star review for us, do so and then get in touch with us once we read your review on air. And we'll be happy to get your details and send that little thank you out. But Liam, this week, this episode of Baby Doll originally aired here in the United States on October the 1st, 1994, meaning we just passed the 29-year anniversary of this episode's original airing here on Fox Kids here in the States. And of course, before we get our IMDb synopsis, we will, of course, remind you that it is brought to you by, as it always is, by the Pod Tower. If you like DC animation, if you like podcasts, and or you like DC animated podcasts, this is the channel on YouTube for you. Head over to youtube.com/thepodtower and subscribe today, and you will get the entire catalog from the folks at Tim Talk that covered every episode of the DCAU from beginning to end. You'll also get some great content from our friends at the Watchtower Database, who are currently in the middle of their Jump on the Batwagon podcast, which started with Batman the Animated Series and is currently on a Superman the Animated Series run. And then you, of course, get our entire catalog as well, all in one convenient place. That's youtube.com/thepodtower. Head over to today and subscribe.
Absolutely. So this is the episode Baby Doll we'll be talking about today. As mentioned, Cal, written by Paul Dini, directed by Dan Reba, with music by Shirley Walker, and animation by Studio Junio or Junio. We've never known and we never will know. But that synopsis reads as such. A actress with a bizarre condition that makes her look permanently like a child seeks revenge against her canceled show's cast and crew.
Okay.
I would question that for accuracy. I guess she tries to get revenge on Cousin Spunky, but everybody else, she's just kidnapped them.
And also
she didn't kidnap any of the crew.
True.
She didn't kidnap a cameraman or a grip. Or a best boy.
I also feel like it's a little bit insensitive to make it like a bizarre condition.
Yeah, like she's they don't specify, but like she's a, you know, she's a little person. She's a dwarf. Like,
right, exactly.
It's not a
un-PC.
She has a condition. It's not all that bizarre. But yes, that is the episode as we start out with we're getting out of a production of Death of a Salesman on, I guess, whatever the Gotham equivalent of Broadway is. They have their own Statue of Liberty, so I'm sure they have their own Broadway too.
Yeah.
Or maybe off Broadway, because we're in kind of a seedy alley, and one of the actors finds a little girl crying, and she tells him that her big brother ran away and left her. And very quickly, this unnamed actor it's made clear that he knows exactly who this supposed little girl is, and before we know it, we're getting a news report from Summer Gleason that he's been kidnapped, but he's certainly not the only actor in Gotham City that's gone missing recently.
Gotham Insider asks, where are they now? When her sitcom Love That Baby premiered 20 years ago, little Mary Louise Doll became an overnight sensation. As the adorable baby doll, young Mary quickly captured the hearts of millions.
Well, baby, you'd better have a pretty good explanation for this.
I didn't mean to.
I remember this show from when I was a kid. It still stinks.
Be that as it may, three of the cast's original actors disappeared last week.
And these two?
Miss Vance is in the show at Gotham Rep. I have police bodyguards following her everywhere. But that other one, Mary Doll, dropped out of sight years ago. Ironically, the same thing that brought her fame turned her into a recluse.
I read about her once in a medical journal. She was born with systemic hypoplasia, a rare condition that kept her from aging.
That's correct, yeah. So Commissioner Gordon is speaking with Batman and Robin. We get a full Batman and Robin episode here together. That's how you know it's the Adventures of Batman and mm-hmm. Robin, right? both gentlemen are here.
What you don't see is the gun that Fox Kids had placed firmly in Bruce Timm and Alan Burnett's back, mm-hmm. forcing Robin into these scripts, whether he needed to be there or not. But yes, he is there. That is a good sign of it being a later run episode.
Spoiler alert, I think he's the best part of the episode, but we'll We'll continue here as we go through our, I'll save the commentary maybe for a little bit later, but yes, Commissioner Gordon is speaking with Batman and Robin in his office about the kidnapped actor, and mentions that he's not the first actor from this former show called Love That Baby, which was a sitcom. The time frame, I guess maybe it ran for 10 seasons because Robin says he remembers it from when he was a kid. Gordon says it started about 20 years ago, and then we get another date later on that it was 10 years since the last episode aired. So I guess it was a potentially a 8 to 10 year run for this show. But this show, Love That Baby, was with this girl by the name of Baby Doll, who is the main character portrayed by Mary Dahl, Dahl spelled D-A-H-L. Gotta love the puns here. Classic Batman fashion. Mary Dahl was the actress, and as we mentioned, she has the physical condition that prevented her from her body from aging, which Batman reminds us is called systemic hypoplasia. According to the DCAU wiki, this is a real condition, but it is often just affects organs or individual body parts, not full persons. So feels like they mixed up a couple of things here for the storytelling, but I digress. Yes, Mary Dahl was the lead actress in the show. Robin, again, seems to mention it, and he was not a fan based on everything that we know and every one of his reactions to the show. Not a fan of how everything goes. It's a typical sort of based on a typical 80s sitcom where you have maybe a Punky Brewster or I'm trying to think of something that was more relevant.
It is funny because obviously everything's in black and white, and as we'll talk about in our voice cast, we have more shout outs to like golden age black and white sitcoms, I think.
Sure.
But you're absolutely right. The vibe is way more like a Full House, like the little kid who comes in and says the one liner and you know has a catchphrase or whatever. That's way more 80s and 90s for sure.
Sure, Gary Coleman, probably a good, mm-hmm. good shout out, probably gets there. So, yeah. So, back to the story. Batman is kind of putting two and two together there, and before he can even say anything, mentions that that they should probably keep an eye on some of the other actors. Gordon mentions that while they have placed some bodyguards around one of the female actors that played Baby Doll's sister on the show. But unfortunately, in the midst of this conversation, the police radio goes off, and then we hear the police are under fire at the same theater that we started out at the beginning. So I guess both the brother and the sister from the show were both on the death of a salesman, because we cut back to that, and Gordon mentions that Dahl has been unable to be located in the midst of all of this. By the way, she had become sort of a recluse and they had not been able to locate her at that time. So as Harvey Bullock is on the scene shouting for backup as they're coming under fire, the sister on the show, on the program, is being abducted by these two thugs. And as they appear to about to make off with her, we hear a voice come from the sky, and it's none other than Robin saving the damsel in distress. He swings in, knocking out, and there's a bit of a fight that occurs. Robin almost getting hit by a moving truck during this little fight, but Batman actually swoops in, takes care of another one of the bad guys. The truck sliding in, though, certainly causes a bit of a distraction as the
Robin makes like a 12-foot box jump to get out of the way of this truck, by the way. Like, I know we should really save that for visuals, but I was like, man, this guy, I know he's an acrobat, but that's an impressive vertical. Like, Dick Grayson should be in the NBA.
You know what they say, able to leap tall trucks in a single bound. That's that's how they usually describe Robin, from what I remember. The abduction unfortunately goes through as Batman is distracted. He attempts to call in the Batmobile for assistance to catch the getaway truck that is driving away. with the abducted actress. But just as the Batmobile pulls out, wouldn't you know it, a young girl chasing a ball steps in the way.
They're getting away!
We'll get them.
Naughty baby, haven't I told you not to run off?
I didn't mean to.
Hold it.
Naughty Mr. Batmans, you play too rough.
I got him!
It's me, dope.
Nuns and dynamite, as the Flash would say, and the Batmobile unfortunately has to swerve out of the way at the last second, allowing the truck to escape. Robin picks up the girl, doesn't happen to notice that she looks exactly like the girl he just saw in the video that they were talking about, they have not found, but picks her up and is trying to console her. A nameless woman comes up and thanks Robin for saving her daughter, but in the moment... of course, she just can't resist dropping her tagline and says, "I didn't mean to." Robin recognizes immediately at that point, it's that jogs Robin's memory. Again, not the curly pigtails or the bows or the saddle shoes or any of that stuff that the girl is wearing that fits the exact description and costume of her in the show. It's this line that jogs Robin's memories. And just as they turn around, Batman and Robin both recognizing that this is the lost baby doll character that they've been looking for, she throws down her ball that she chased out into the road, and it turns out to be a smoke bomb, which causes all sorts of confusion, leading to a funny bit where Robin accidentally it grabs Detective Bullock from behind, detaining him by accident. This allows baby doll and this strange woman to get away, and we get more information as we cut to Summer Gleason's office next, and we get her trying to get a comment from the mayor. Why she's going to the mayor for this story about a kidnapping from an old actress, I don't know, but this is what we have. But she's interrupted by Batman and Robin, who happen to walk in and get the lowdown on just why baby doll might be after or interested in kidnapping this old cast. And we get more of the backstory as we learn that baby doll herself had gotten a little bit tired of the role that she was in and had decided to quit and walk out in the middle of production at one point, and tried to go make it on her own as a serious actress.
Since when are you interested in has-been actors?
Since that one's been kidnapping her co-stars.
You're serious?
She's been picking them off one by one. Any reason she'd have a grudge?
Actually, they should hate her. Doll put them all out of work when she quit the series to become a dramatic actress. What? Will these hands never be clean? Here's the smell of the blood still. All the perfumes of Arabia will not sweeten this little hand. Oh.
P.U.
That's what the critics said. Baby's dramatic career flopped, and when she tried to start her TV show again, the networks turned her down.
That still doesn't explain why she's after her old cast.
Maybe there's a clue in these old episodes.
You can borrow them if you want. And when you crack the case, you can pay me back with an exclusive interview.
So at this point, she feels like perhaps there could be some motivation to reunite the cast or take some revenge in some form or fashion. Batman asks to borrow Summer Gleason's copies of the baby doll program, which allows them to do a little bit more research. And Summer Gleason says that she's happy to let them borrow them as long as she gets a one-on-one exclusive with the Dark Knight when once he cracks the case. But of course, Batman has disappeared before she can even finish that sentence. And then we actually cut to the aforementioned baby doll and the thus far captured part of her old cast, just to get a little bit of insight on what is going on with this character and what her devious plans are with her old castmates.
That's right. So yes, as had been mentioned on that news report earlier, it isn't just her old sitcom brother and sister that have been captured, but also her sitcom parents as well. And as they're all sort of discussing amongst themselves what exactly might be going on, we get Baby Doll or Mary coming into the room and sitting up in a high chair, making everyone sort of sit down at a kitchen table. And literally they're on the set of the old sitcom, apparently. And she's decided that she's going to just recreate the show, because she realizes now that the best years of her life were on this show and recreated on actual television. She's just decided that she's going to recreate it all on her own. And the father of this group, or the would-be father, Todd, is not too pleased with this and can't believe how deranged and selfish he is. And in a very Hollywood actor moment, after he's been kidnapped by presumably the same two big burly men who kidnapped our other two, is just going to walk on out and tells Baby Doll she'll be hearing from his lawyer, which did crack me up a little bit. But then we see this red-haired woman once again, who had been posing as Baby Doll's mother in the previous scene, and she just beats him up, and turns out she knows kung fu. It's determined that very clearly these actors are not going to leave, although Baby Doll reminds her that there's one more piece that they need to collect. So, and she tells them that they're going to be together forever, which is quite ominous. And then we, of course, cut to the Batcave, where Batman and Robin are discussing the case, and Robin's watching through all of these old episodes, just hates his life, just miserable.
Remember that time Poison Ivy nearly smothered us in those vines with the really sharp thorns?
Yes.
This is worse. I did learn one thing, though. Baby hasn't gotten every member of her cast. In the last season, the show's ratings began to drop, so the producers introduced a new character, Baby's little cousin Spunky.
According to these, Doll was furious that she was upstaged on her birthday episode and walked off the series.
So why hasn't she gone after Cousin Spunky?
Maybe she's waiting for the right occasion.
But they do mention as they're continuing to discuss that there is one more cast member that is missing that she hasn't gotten yet, and that is this late addition to the show they introduced, which is another staple of a lot of these types of shows, where once the children characters get a little too old, they grow up, they start to go through puberty, we need a new little cute kid introduced, and that is none other than, on this show, Cousin Spunky, who made his big splash by shoving Baby Doll's face into a cake on a birthday episode of the show, which even Robin can't quite help himself from chuckling at. But
the only thing he likes about the show is Cousin Spunky. He's a big Cousin Spunky guy.
But they mentioned that he actually became Spunky kind of became popular, and that in fact that sort of drove Baby Doll Mary to end the show prematurely, because she didn't like having the spotlight taken away from her, and decided to, as mentioned in the previous scenes, try to go be a serious actor. And when that didn't work, she tried to get the old show back together, and that didn't work either. So they know that they've got to find this Cousin Spunky, as he's sort of the last missing piece. And where else would you find him but in some suburban neighborhood? I guess all of these people live in Gotham, which is convenient for
they all retired to New York.
Plot. apparently. And Spunky is a kid, young man living in suburbia, playing loud electric guitar in the in his neighborhood with the garage door open. And we see Miriam, Baby Doll's assistant, walk up with a baby carriage, complaining that his guitar is too loud. And of course, when he tries to blow her off, we get the reveal that it's Baby Doll, of course, in the carriage, and they grab old cousin Spunky as well, and they decide they're going to reenact this birthday party, but this time it's going to be a little bit different. She's going to shove cousin Spunky's face into the cake, and of course, what else would there be in the cake? No nuns, but we do have dynamite this week.
It's time for my birthday party! Yay! We're going to have so much fun!
Ready when you are, Miss Doll.
Goodies! You all members what happened the last time I had a birthday. Poopy old Spunkies pushed my head in the cake. Everybody laughed and laughed. Well, I'm laughing now.
Well, what do you mad at me for? It wasn't anything personal.
We were just playing characters in a TV show.
It was real to me. Everybody loved Baby Doll until you came along. You made them forget me.
Now, baby's gonna get evens.
No, don't!
Stop her!
Help! Wait!
It's never too late to have a happy childhood.
She's going to blow him up for, I guess, killing her show, and maybe, I guess, kill herself and the rest of the cast, because it's like they're all sitting at the table.
Yep.
So group murder suicide here attempt, and but Spunky is a little more resourceful than we realize, as he grabs the dynamite with his teeth, and then I don't know the physics of this, but he whips his head backwards and spits the dynamite away, and it blows up far enough away that it doesn't do any damage. And we then find out that Baby Doll's little doll that she's been carrying around, Mr. Happy Head, also has a gun inside of one of his eyes, and she aims it right at Spunky. And that's when Batman finally makes his entrance into the room. And we reveal that it's not the actual cousin Spunky that's been tied up, but Robin in disguise. And it's time for our final showdown. But first, they have to deal with Baby Doll begins to run off. But Miriam, as we discussed, is a little tougher than she looks and gives Batman and Robin a little bit of trouble before Batman. Well, again, I feel like I should save some of this for visuals, because I don't know what else we're going to talk about. But he wraps a bat rope. It's not a grappling hook. It's a bat rope, batarang with a rope on it around her leg. And she tries to do a big flying kick, and he grabs her and swings her through a wall.
I don't know. The physics, how did he?
It is a television set wall. So maybe it's cheap plywood and paper or whatever. Hmm. But it's still I was kind of shocked that they were allowed to do something that even vaguely violent in this scene. But that sort of leads us towards our grand finale, as Batman tells Robin to stay behind and tend to the hostages. And he's going to go chase down Baby Doll, who has made her way into what else? Where else will we have our final showdown? But a carnival.
Mm-hmm. Naturally. Yep. So Baby Doll rides a little tricycle, a big wheel, in fact, all the way to said carnival, and she weaves her way in and out. Batman tracks her there, and he decides he's going to see if he can see her from above. It is a hustling, bustling carnival for sure. He goes to the top of one of the roller coasters, and he's from the top of the roller coaster. He's trying his best to see, but quickly realizes that with as many people that are there in attendance, it's going to be a difficult task to spot her even from there. So, of course, using his intellect, Batman figures that he can draw the crowd away from her if he's able to get their attention. So he swings down a little bit lower and lands on one of the booths. And from there, he pretty much just stands there, and we get some hashtag cape movement, Liam. Talk about that in our visuals.
Absolutely.
Stands on top of one of the booths, and this, of course, attracts not only kids, but begins pulling adults over to just look in awe at the Batman and see him there, and ooh and ah, and I feel like if this was nowadays, they would have been taking pictures of him with their cell phones. But the one person, of course, that isn't interested in seeing Batman is left behind, and that is Baby Doll herself, who kind of puts two and two together and realizes that she's lost her cover at this point and sprints away. Batman chases her down through sort of one of a like a McDonald's play place, essentially, with those little plastic tunnels, and chases her into and through some tunnels where she actually gets the upper hand on him. He's obviously a big hulking man in a tunnel. I feel like there's a children's comedy movie where this takes place, like Jingle All the Way or something like that, where
it's plausible,
where he's chasing a kid through one of these things, and there's comedy, of course, haha, that ensues. In this case, however, it's violence that ensues, as Batman gets hit in the head several times. He gets pistol whipped with Mr. Happy Head several different times. And then just as it appears that he may be done for, as Baby Doll has him dead to rights with Mr. Happy Head pointed in his direction, he pulls out a grappling gun and shoots it directly, knocking Mr. Happy Head out of the tube, forcing Baby Doll to chase after. And as she does, she continues down this path and ends up in the Hall of Mirrors. The Hall of Mirrors seems to be a good hiding place for her, but as she runs down, she begins to see all of these distorted versions of her, as you would going through a Hall of Mirrors. But the last mirror, she's suddenly her attention is suddenly grabbed by this last mirror, because it appears to make her look like an adult fully grown adult woman. And she's distracted by it, and she is sort of in awe of her own beauty. And then she quickly realizes that it's all a mirage, as she begins to sort of narrate what's going on. And
look, that's me in there. The real me. There I am. But it's not really real, is it? Just made up and pretend, like my family and my life and everything else. Why couldn't you just let me make believe?
Sees Batman in one of the reflections of the mirror, but she believes it to be him, so she turns Mr. Happy Head loose and just begins shooting at every mirror that she can see, until finally all the mirrors are taken out except for this final visage of her as an adult woman. And she turns, looks at it, and then again begins shooting it, destroying the final version of her as she begins to weep and cry, until Mr. Happy Head is completely out of ammo, and Batman knows it's safe to approach at that point. And she begins bawling, grabbing onto Batman's leg as he gently pats her head, understanding the turmoil that she's been through, as she utters, "I didn't mean to," as the last line of the episode. And that is where we end things, Liam. So... I'm not going to be very kind to this episode. I'll just say that I never liked this episode. I still do not like this episode. I think that there are bones of an interesting idea here. And I think that we have seen the tragedy of the Batman villains used so well when it comes to Batman the Animated Series. I think that this episode in some ways undermines itself for two reasons. I actually went online. I read a couple of different people's opinions of this episode just to see where people mm-hmm. landed. I think there are a lot of people who modern day have kind of seen things in this particular episode, applied it to their own lives, or just, I think, read into what was actually said in the story. I read one particular review that said, oh, the tragedy of her being rejected by her own family. And I was like, wait a minute, was that in the episode? Did we get? No, I went back and looked. I'm like, no, there's no implication that she had. Obviously, she's a Hollywood child, so you can kind of draw from that or read into that.
Right.
There's not been too many stories of child actors or actresses that turn out to be happy contributing members of society. They're there, but a lot of times it's crash and burn television for a lot of people.
Right. The ones that do are the ones that like retired at 13 and
right, and
you know,
and you're never
Poughkeepsie.
Exactly. You know? It would have been Cousin Spunky, essentially.
Right.
Cousin Spunky's happy in his garage playing his guitar, like as a grown man, like he's forgotten his acting age. But so I think you can apply some things to this. You can add your own sort of headcanon to what's going on.
Sure.
And make a more interesting story than I think was actually told. What's actually told is the story of a mentally deranged person who while in some ways, like it didn't even feel like they made her a victim of like child. Like it's nowadays, I feel like it's so easy. And maybe it's because we've seen that type of self-destruction and the tragedy that comes with child actors and actresses, that it's just in our conscious to be able to understand like that that's typically not like a normal life for a child to live. But she's 20 years old or something like that. So she isn't a kid when she's on the show.
Right.
It's hard to even apply that to it. Like, cause they said she's 30 in the episode. Which means she was only 20 or maybe she was 10. I don't know. Depending on, I guess, where the show is. Anyway, I'm talking in circles here, but I feel like there's a lot being read into what the character's story was when it turns out it's just a sort of a mentally deranged person that's trying to kill herself and the other people. And you don't really get that idea that she isn't happy with her physical appearance until that final scene. Like that's where it turns into like the,
yeah,
I don't feel like I can be a normal person. That was not the story that was told for the entire episode. The entire episode was that she was jealous that she got upstaged by this other guy, and she tried to break out on her own as an actor in serious roles, but she was only ever typecast essentially. So it's similar to like the Grey Ghost story too.
I was going to say, I think there are the elements of this. I don't want to cut you off if you're
not finished,
but
no, go ahead.
There are elements of this story that I think have been done better in other episodes that we've talked about. It's you know, there's as you mentioned, there's episodes about an actor being typecast and how, you know, people only seeing you as the character you played on TV, how devastating that can be and how tough it can be to work after you've had such a successful and iconic role because people can't see you as anything other than that character. We've talked, you know, the physical issue of her, you know, not caring, you know, not, or visualizing a certain way that she should look and in reality not being able to achieve that. That's, you know, that's in so many of our villains across these shows that, you know, that go through these, you know, horrific physical transformations, like a Clayface or Two-Face or, you know, some of the static villains, even. Like there's a lot of that across these shows that I think is dealt with in a way more interesting way, in a way more, and it's sort of a theme throughout the episode. Whereas to your point, and they even say that in, I think it's one of the times when they're talking to Summer Gleason, where they're like, she hates her old castmates, and she says, well, they should hate her. She's the one who got the show canceled. Like she walked off the set. So clearly like there is something here that, like you said, like, okay, this is someone that you can feel, you know, sympathy for, in that she clearly has like a mental derangement. And,
right.
And now after she tried to go out into the world and make something of herself on her own and was unsuccessful, now she wants to try to, you know, hold on to a little bit of her, you know, her perceived happiness, even though, as we established by the end, everyone on the show was miserable. But it's the past, like, you know, it's her trying to relive her own nostalgia. He said on his podcast where he talks about Batman cartoons from 30 years ago, like very, very, again, all of these things are like very interesting and identifiable. And, like I said, you can feel, I think you could feel empathy if any of those were the focus, but it's not real. None of those are really the focus for too much of the episode. Mm-hmm. And by the time we get to that thing, I think the final scene, and we'll talk about that later in voice acting, certainly, is tremendous. You know, both on the side of Batman sort of trying in vain to reach out to her, you know, when he tells her, like, I know you're scared, you don't have to do this. Like, he's trying to, you know, he doesn't want to have a fist fight with the, you know, with this person that's clearly, you know, disturbed. But, and then the scene of her sort of talking out how she sees herself versus how the world sees her. Like, again, I think that's all interesting, identifiable, and has been covered in a lot of our other episodes in more interesting ways and more full ways. But as it stands, it felt like we wanted so much of this episode to be either, as we'll talk about, visual gags of, isn't it funny that this person that looks like a little girl, like a literal baby, is fighting Batman. And two, like, they wanted to obviously pay homage to these sort of various eras of sitcoms. And so it feels like it's a very sort of light comedic episode until we hit that last 2 minutes of our runtime, where now we're creating this story of her being sort of, you know, poked and prodded and put through the ringer of Hollywood. Again, could have been an interesting idea. I think it's a character that would maybe be worth revisiting in another show or another comic book or something down the line. But as it stands, I don't think the final product of this episode could have been if maybe we had picked a lane a little bit, I think.
No, and that's, and here's because it didn't have a lane to lay in. And what we got, I was so like, so much of this episode is irritating. And like, I get it. She's supposed to be this person that has a disorder that gives her this, like, her identity is completely and solely found in this character. So she talks like this child. But that's so much of the episode, and it's so, like, it's just so cartoony and goofy. And it's not, at no point did I like laugh haha at this episode. Like, it didn't like, it's not funny enough to be a comedy episode.
Right. And as you mentioned, Robin has some pretty funny lines we'll talk about later. But
Robin is the best part. Robin, yeah. Taking Robin's whole thing is like my whole mood for the entire episode. He's like, PU at the beginning, like, that's awful. Like, he just has this terrible, like, this is not good attitude watching her acting or the sitcom. And then at the end, when Cousin Spunky shoves her face into the cake, we get a little haha. He like chuckles a little bit. And like, mm-hmm. Yeah, the little bit at the end where Batman is running through the carnival and we get the mirror scene and Batman looks cool, we'll talk about here when we get into visuals, but it's just the end product and how the episode ends. Like, we don't really get, does she go to jail? What's her punishment for kidnapping these people? We're supposed to feel bad that she, you know, she has this mental breakdown finally coming to realize that this is like what the root, I don't know what I'm supposed to feel at the end or why I'm supposed to feel bad for her. 'Cause she has this realization that she'll never look like a real, like a grown adult woman. So it just left me very confused. I didn't like the episode overall. We spend so much time with Baby Doll. It's just, and she annoys me as a character. Her voice is annoying. So for all those reasons, I despise this episode. I want stripped from the record and never talked about again. I ended up giving plot a 2 out of 10, and only a 2 out of 10 because of the final scene at the carnival and Robin's little comedic bits there. Everything else you could transfer directly to hell.
I went a couple points higher. I gave it a 4. I didn't particularly enjoy it either. Like I said, that last scene is really good. And if the episode was spent more time in the episode was spent sort of understanding her, and like, to me, it should be that like she hates being seen as
right,
you know, being infantilized, being seen as this little girl character she played, you know, much like, as you mentioned, like a Gary Coleman, or obviously famously like Shirley Temple, or some of the, you know, some of the famous child actors of, especially of that era, right, of, you know, of Hollywood were treated horribly. But she herself is the one trying to recreate it, because, as you know, that was the most successful, and I guess in retrospect, happy she ever was. But yeah, it's hard to feel too much. Like I said, I feel like at the end, maybe you feel sympathetic for her because she's such a like broken and deranged person,
right,
but you don't feel like empathy for her because we only really learn about like this plight about her, you know, her physical appearance and how that's over the years. We only really get that at the very end of the episode. The rest of the episode was just about how she, you know, she screwed up an acting job and then, you know, is trying to recreate this sitcom. And again, like I said, there's a lot of it is spent on gags and on homages to various eras of sitcoms, which we'll talk about maybe in a little bit in visuals as well. But it's, yeah, overall, I think there's a really interesting idea here. Like I said, I even think, you know, as Paul Dini, you know, a couple of years ago, he wrote a novel version of Mad Love that it, you know, kind of expanded even more on Harley as a character before she meets the Joker. You know, I could see Paul Dini himself even coming back to this character and writing a story that maybe is infused with more of the good stuff from the end of the episode throughout. And then maybe this character is more interesting and less annoying, but we'll talk about that more in voice acting in a minute.
Yeah.
I guess we should mention, just for the posterity of saying we mentioned it, the Cousin Spunky thing is a direct riff on the Cousin Oliver character that was created for the last season of the Brady Bunch, because all of the Brady kids, because that show ran for like 12 years, all of the kids were like 30. So so they introduced the new, as mentioned, they introduced, it happened on the Cosby Show. That, like a lot of sitcoms will do that, where the cute little kid character, you know, becomes a teenager in real life. So they introduced the new little kid. But that was specifically lampooning the Brady Bunch, I think, with that inclusion. So
who on earth would ever try and elongate content just for the sake of making content? That's terrible people, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Who would ever do that?
Just get in and get out, you know.
Right.
Don't overstay your welcome.
Precisely. All right, Liam, let's move on to our next category, which is going to be animation and visuals. You mentioned Studio Junio or Junio, whichever it is, responsible for our animation this week. All right, I'm going to get something out of the way here that I couldn't put my finger on while I was watching it. I was like, Baby Doll's character model looks like somebody or something that I've seen before.
Oh, I know.
It haunted me forever. The answer is Elmira from Tiny Toons.
Correct. Which to me, I always assumed, because there's so much like Tiny Toon alum on this show, I genuinely would have thought the episode pitch began and ended with, wouldn't it be funny if Batman had to fight Elmira from Tiny Toons?
Right. Right. The story, there are some stories out there on the various wikis about the pitch and Paul Dini thinking that Bruce Timm and Alan Burnett were going to reject this story, but ultimately ended up not rejecting it. So I don't know if he threw it out as a joke and then it turned into like a haha, now the joke's on you. You have to write this. We actually like this idea. You have to write it. But yeah, that's the other thing we didn't mention in plot, but it's written by Paul Dini, who has a pretty good batting average. So it's almost like the stakes are a little bit higher. You expect a good story, but I don't think this is among the best, but yeah, character model looks like Elmira from Tiny Toons. That takes me immediately out of the episode. Like, I don't see this person living in the same universe as Batman, Robin, Commissioner Gordon. This doesn't look like DC animated little person or DC animated child. It looks like someone from Tiny Toons was transported into the DC animated universe, which adds to the irritation that I have with
watching. We've seen little kids in this show before, you know? I mean, I know she's not literally.
Underdwellers, Liam, Dollar in the bad episode jar.
Underdwellers, the Invisible Man episode, I've got Batman in my basement. Like, we've seen kids of varying ages in this show. None of them had those, like, giant, like, saucer eyes that that Baby Doll has.
Correct. Yeah, I don't get it. And Cousin Spunky isn't that much better either. Like, he's kind of got the same DNA. He doesn't have quite the same giant eyes, but he's definitely like a Bruce Timm caricature drawing of a Looney Tune. Like, it just is. Yeah, not a fan of the Baby Doll character, and it is so much of this episode, as we just discussed. She has so much screen time, so it's very irritating to me that I watched a 22-minute episode of Elmira running around in Gotham City. But let's get back to, the rest of the episode. So we don't have a lot of action and fisticuffs because it's Batman versus a child essentially a baby doll the entire episode, but we do get a little bit of brutality. We get Batman getting pistol whipped by Mr. Happy Head, which very famously, it's on one of the wikis, I think it's the DCAU wiki, there's some storyboards from the episode featuring the sequence of Batman getting pistol whipped several times, and there's notes from S&P saying Batman Baby Doll cannot bash Batman in the head with Mr. Happy Head. But that ended up getting through somehow. So I don't know if it was they had to change the angle of this
attack. Cut away quicker or something.
Right. Give up one of those flashbangs that happens do a POV shot or something. But interestingly, S&P standards and practices were not in favor of Batman getting bashed in the head with a baby doll. With Baby Doll's Baby Doll. So there is plenty of Batman looking cool in this episode, especially in the third act. Lots of Batman standing in the shadows and the white lenses and standing on top, especially the shot of him standing on top of the roller coaster. I thought that shot was really, really cool looking. House of Mirrors bit is really good too. Lots of Batman in the shadows, lenses. She keeps turning, changing mirrors, and the mirrors explode. And then you cut to another mirror, and she shoots that mirror, and that mirror explodes. And Batman's moving around from mirror to mirror. I did also like the opening sequence with Baby Doll in the. You get the silhouette of her. It's a very creepy child, like certainly horror movie vibes. I know we've moved out of the spooky season, but. A crying child with a somewhat highlighted silhouette in a dark alley that leads to a grown man getting abducted is certainly spooky enough. But we get that a couple of times with her kind of being silhouetted. And I didn't have too much. The fight scene, I guess the fight scene on the set that you mentioned is worth discussing too, with our assistant Miriam that was playing Baby Doll's surrogate mom for the episode, who also knows kung fu apparently, or karate the other, because she handles Robin pretty easily, and Batman has his hands full with her. Batman has a camera fall on him in that sequence. That was pretty rough.
It's like a big giant like spotlight. He should be dead.
I was gonna say, I was surprised.
Batman's couch has just been a big bag of blood at that point.
All right. I probably took up all the highlights now, but anything else that I left untouched that's worth worth discussing as far as you mentioned at the top Robin's 12-foot jump over the top of the truck, saving his own life.
Very impressive. Yeah, I think this is another episode, as we've mentioned in the past, that is that had Adventures in Batman and Robin trading cards made out of it. With very grainy screenshots. Especially the shot of Batman where he's sort of standing on top of the whatever it is, the hot dog stand or whatever, to get all of the kids to run up to him so that he can see where Baby Doll is hiding. Which is a great bit, by the way. Like him like tweeting like, okay, I'm not gonna be able to find her if I'm up here, so I'll jump down and everyone will run up to see me except for her who's trying to avoid me. Like that's a clever little bit there.
Yeah. I never picked that up as a kid. Like I never realized that that's what he was doing. And today I was like, oh, that's really impressive. That's pretty fun. Yes,
that's pretty clever. But yeah, that image, he's kind of like half in silhouette, but it's his bottom half. So it's just like his cape is kind of flowing in and out of shadow. And then you see the symbol and his face. So I always thought that shot's pretty iconic. I do like the design of the gun coming out of Mr. Happy Head as like a little Raggedy Andy doll. Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of fun. One thing I noticed, it's not on the DCAU wiki, but I know because I watched a lot of TV Land growing up, is that the mom of the sitcom, whose name is June, they say, is very clearly based on the mom from Leave It to Beaver.
Aha!
Barbara funny. Billingsley, I believe, was her name.
Mm-hmm.
If you look facially and the way her hair is done in the old sitcom footage, it's June from Leave It to Beaver. So some fun sitcom homages. Not only we'll talk about some more homages to those various sitcoms from various eras when we get to voice acting, but yeah. Like I said, I think we kind of covered all the highlights. All the silhouette is cool. The shot where, you know, Summer Gleason looks up after she hears Batman's voice and he's standing there in shadow, and then Robin kind of slowly walks out from behind him, I think is really, like, I don't think it was intended to be funny, but I laughed at it. Like, mm-hmm. he's squat. Like, I don't know how much taller Batman's supposed to be than Robin, but like it felt like Robin's like squat. Like making himself as skinny as possible and then squatting down a little bit, mm-hmm. so that Batman can have his cool entrance before he saunters into frame. But yeah, a lot of cool Batman in silhouette. Studio Junio, kind of a mixed track record. We've talked about them. I think this might be the last episode of theirs we hadn't done before. They did Dreams and Darkness and Avatar and Mudslide, which I all remember being pretty good, but they also did Bullet for Bullock and, speaking of a dollar in the bad episode jar, Underdwellers. So this isn't Akam bad, but there's just like there's something a little bit off on everybody's model, I feel like, and everybody's a little like a little shaky, but not too bad. And like I said, there's a lot of like, I you know, silhouetted Batman stuff, especially that ending bit in the Hall of Mirrors. And yeah, I'm sure like doing all of the warped reflections and stuff of Baby Dolls, and I don't even know how you begin to pull a trick like that off in traditional hand-drawn animation, so that's very impressive as well. So nothing great. I like the, and as we already talked, you already touched on the Baby Doll design itself. Yeah, she looks like Elmira, but with blonde hair. So, and she has curls, which again, I kind of figured was maybe like a Shirley Temple, shout, but, I don't know. I ended up settling on a 7 out of 10 for visuals. I think there's a lot of good looking stuff in here. A lot of cool backgrounds, the sitcom set, the carnival are not typical things we see in this show.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of some unique settings and, as mentioned, lots of shots of Batman looking pretty cool. So, yeah, I settled on a 7 for my visual score.
I just went a point lower. I just, not enough action in the episode for me. Maybe some more action would have been enough to pull up my plot score a little bit because I would have been distracted. It's just, you already talked about also the, we don't quite get how did Robin, what was Robin's suit? Spunky suit, which, mm-hmm. by the way, I did not remember before this episode that Robin was spunky in disguise. So that was a nice happy
when he
surprise.
Bit the dynamite and threw it away, I remembered, but not before. Yeah, not before then.
Yeah, that was a nice little surprise. But also, he just takes off the mask, which is fine, but like no explanation as to the fat suit or where his gloves came from.
Where he was fully suited, cape, gloves, belt, and all. Inside just fat suit, I guess.
He's wearing a completely rubber human suit over over his entire costume.
Yes. Hair still looked great when he took it off, though. Still spiked up. Whatever gel he's using, very impressive. Didn't sweat it out.
Brought to you by Got to Be Glued.
That's right. Oh, and I should mention, speaking of other old sitcom homages, the two thugs are Gilligan and the Skipper from Gilligan's Island.
Right. Yeah, we did. So. Did miss that homage, but yeah, so 6 out of 10 for me, just a little bit lower, not enough action for me. I did appreciate that those cool Batman visuals, the hashtag cape movement on top of the hot dog stand is pretty cool, but just not enough interesting stuff outside of that to bring me out of it or to take away from my dislike of the baby doll design. Who does get I would say gets an upgrade when it comes to her design in New Batman Adventures. So, all right, Liam, let's move on to our next category, which is going to be music. Music this week by the great Shirley Walker. Thoughts on music? We get a reused musical piece that we heard twice before, not sequentially, but we've heard it twice before, you know, on our reviews at least.
Yeah, like the carnival, like Ferris wheel merry-go-round music or whatever, reused from Robin's Reckoning Part 2, and then it would later be used again on World's Finest, I believe. Yep. So I mean, I think there's a lot of xylophone, which I think goes along with our very Tiny Toons looking main villain. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, you know, kind of whimsical sitcom music, even during like the more sinister moments when she's, you know, when she pulls the gun or whatever and tells the rest of the family that they're going to be together forever or whatever. I think that's real. You know, there's some kind of fun little sitcom ending stings used there pretty effectively. I enjoyed that. And then, yeah, the little bit of music we get at the end when she's in the Hall of Mirrors, I think, is solid. I didn't necessarily pick up, other than like the type of instrument used, I didn't necessarily pick up immediately on like a specific baby doll theme. It just felt like when she showed up, there's more xylophones and sort of whimsical sitcom cartoon music.
I think it's whatever was supposed to be it's kind of like the TV show theme song. It's what starts when you see the title card and then comes in a little bit later, which is absolutely xylophone, but it feels like a derivative almost of the Joker theme. Like it's that same, and that's just maybe because the Joker's theme is played on xylophone in some instances. But yeah, it felt it pops up at the beginning and plays throughout that kind of scene there, and then it shows up again, I think, when we get the reveal with the Batmobile swerve, and then the maybe again when she gets Spunky, or who she thinks is Spunky, and she kidnaps him. So I think it pulls up a couple of different times there, and then there's a variation of it that plays when she runs into the play place. Batman chases in after.
Yeah. So I think there's some good stuff. Like I said, not a hummable track or a villain theme. Like you said, there's definitely we talked about it before, when they get to go into a certain genre of show or movie, and they sort of that's appropriate for the character. It feels like our composers always get to have a little bit of fun there. I settled on a 7 out of 10 for music. I think it's good, and like I said, I think it adds a lot to that final scene especially, but not a super memorable soundtrack beyond just the use of some instruments that perhaps don't normally get used.
Yeah, there's one or two Shirley Walker Batman refrains that come in. One's with the Batmobile, and I think one is later in the House of Mirrors, but Yeah, just not a ton. Like it's fine, but it felt, like I said, just a little bit too close to Harley and Joker's theme for my liking. It's a fine musical piece, but just not different enough. And again, sometimes it's hard when you're reviewing an episode and you dislike the main portion of it, which is the story, and not then take that out on all the other categories, right? We do our best not to do that. So I'm still giving it a 6 out of 10. I think there's some good stuff here, but I think my nitpicking is that it just feels a little too derivative. So that's my critique. Would I have been as critical had I liked the episode? I don't know.
I guess we'll never know, as the meme says.
Exactly. All right, Liam, let's wrap things up here with our final category of the day, which is going to be our cast of voice actors and actresses. As you mentioned, quite a large cast here, even with some of our voice cast members only having a few short lines, but certainly worth noting because of their links, as you mentioned, to their own place in television history and sitcoms and the like. So let's go ahead and talk about this week's voice cast.
Absolutely. So playing, well, actually, we don't know if this is actually how Cousin Spunky sounds, because it's Robin the whole time, as it turns out. But based on Strange Secret of Bruce Wayne, he is apparently a perfect mimic of other people's voices. So we'll just assume that's how Cousin Spunky sounds. It's played by Jason Marsden, a guy we talk about all the time, especially as Gear on Static Shock and Snapper Carr on Justice League. But apparently this would be in the chronological order. This would be his first DCAU role. So there's a weird little trivia note to stick in your brain.
Worth noting, a start to a memorable career with the DCAU.
Absolutely. Elsewhere, we do have Tazia Valenza voicing Miriam, Baby Doll's right-hand woman. She's maybe more famous. She plays Poison Ivy all the time and stuff now.
Yep.
The Arkham games, probably most famously, but like Lego stuff, and I think some of the DC superhero girls stuff as well. So I think we've probably talked about her before as well and other things, but a veteran voice actor, doesn't get a lot to do, but she does get
an important line though. That's a shout out to maybe a show that you don't think of when it comes to sitcoms, but was technically a sitcom. But yeah, it was the first animated sitcom, maybe, which was The Flintstones, where she's kicking Robin's ass with Kung Fu, and Robin goes, "Man, you're something else." And she goes, "It's a living." And then she get into a Kung Fu stance and try and continue beating Robin. So
good call.
Likes that "it's a living" shrug before getting back down to business.
That's right. A couple other brief ones. Drewy Strangis plays Tammy, the sister on the sitcom. Doesn't get much to do there, but some of our other Baby Doll sitcom family actors are worth talking about. Well, they're all worth talking about. I don't want to say that, but are more memorable to talk about. One being Alan Young playing the dad, Todd, probably best known to people of a certain era. He was the human character on the Mr. Ed show, but the talking horse sitcom.
Mm-hmm.
He was Wilbur on that show. Also had a pretty memorable voice acting career as well.
Didn't he just Scrooge McDuck? I think he's Scrooge McDuck.
Yes, he's Scrooge McDuck in DuckTales and the Mickey Christmas Carol and all that. And I think we've talked about him on, I think he was in an episode of Static as well. So he's a really, really talented voice actor, and obviously, yeah, probably best known to people listening to this, probably, as you mentioned, as Scrooge McDuck on DuckTales and all that. But it was fun hearing him. He's a very memorable voice. Also had a turn on a radio drama, Adventures in Odyssey, that you and I listened to growing up. So a
yep.
Very memorable voice to us personally in our childhood. But elsewhere, and this is a really fun one, although ironically he's not playing Cousin Spunky. They got Cousin Oliver in this episode. Robbie Rist is playing Brian, the older brother character. He also went on to have a great voice acting career. He voiced Michelangelo in a lot of Ninja Turtles stuff. Yeah. I think the live action movies, actually, he's doing the voice of Michelangelo. So And as I think come back to voice the character a few more times. But yeah, Cousin Oliver himself is voicing a character in this episode that has a Cousin Oliver pastiche in it, which I just think is wonderful.
and I mean, kudos. We through conversations with a friend of the show, Kevin Altieri, and of course the numerous DVD extras and things that we've seen. Andrea Romano was famous for doing this, where they were like, "What if we got this person to play this role as an homage, or as a shout out, or as a wink or a nod?" Because of what we're writing about, and how often that turned out to be such a funny wink and a nod, or giving somebody a job in a role that they are ironically playing in some form or fashion. But yeah, this is not the first time nor the last time that the great Andrea Romano chose to work with a character and cast them in a way that was sort of fitting to mirroring what happened in real life. So yeah, kudos. Absolutely. He doesn't get a whole lot to do, obviously, in the episode. He talks in the first scene very briefly, but yeah, just pretty funny and cool that they ended up going out. They could have gotten anybody to do that. Heck, Bruce Timm or somebody could have done
right.
it. But they're like, yeah, let's get Robbie Riss to do this, since he was Cousin Oliver. Like, how cool is that?
And yeah, and then he obviously had a sense of humor about, I'm sure, when he read the script, of realizing what this was sort of homaging and lampooning, and obviously came in to do it. So yeah, it's that's just such a fun note when I read that in the on IMDb, and I was like, oh my god, they actually got Cousin Oliver in the episode about how Cousin Oliver ruined sitcoms, basically. So that's a great bit there. Some of our other regulars, regular guest characters, we do have Marie Devon as Summer Gleason. We have briefly, we have Robert Costanza as Harvey Bullock and Bob Hastings as Gordon. And is Alfred in this?
No, I did not see
he's credited, but yeah, I was like, I don't think Alfred's in this episode.
Maybe he was in a scene and got cut.
I feel like sometimes his name's in the credits, even when he's not there. Like, I feel like that's happened with a few
maybe
characters.
Maybe he played like a background voice of like,
maybe he's one of the crowd. Yeah, maybe somebody in the crowd, or maybe he's one of the like, there's an episode where I think we talked about not too long ago where Bob Hastings is in it, but he doesn't play Commissioner Gordon. Like, so it does happen, I think, where they just like, hey, yeah, can you do some grunts or play a, maybe he's one of the thugs or something. I don't know. I didn't pick up on it if it was him, but regardless, he is credited in this episode. But yes, our main guest actor of the piece is a woman named Allison LaPlaca, playing both Baby Doll / Mary Doll, and also playing the mom, June, who's kind of she's no stranger to sitcoms and television, going back quite a few decades. A lot of, like, if you look up her IMDb, it's a lot of like two episodes on this show, one episode on this show, three episodes on Grey's Anatomy, two episodes on Boston Legal, that kind of thing. Like, she was a good old working actress for several years, and also had some voice acting chops as well. So this is where I come to like my difficult time. This will be like the hardest part to grade, because her voice as what she's doing, the Baby Doll voice, it's so annoying.
Agreed. Yep.
And by design, because she's right. Elmira.
Right.
Like, she has a catchphrase. Like, I get why. She's not doing anything wrong. She's playing the character the way this character, I don't think I wouldn't have played it this way, because I wouldn't have written it that way. I say. Very arrogantly, talk as if I could talk to Paul Dini about how he wrote the character, but you know what I mean. Like, it's right. I'm not saying she did a bad job, because she did what was asked her. And when she drops the Baby Doll voice, I think she's really good.
Yeah,
like even in that first scene when the family's around the table, and she talks about how she did the training and she went out for all the auditions, and she sort of slowly realized that this is what the show was when she was the happiest. I think she's really good. And then yes, that final scene where she's in the fun house and the mirrors are everywhere, and she's yelling not only at herself, but yelling at Batman of, why couldn't you just stay away? and let me play make believe or whatever. I think she's really, really good, which goes back to how much I wish the rest of the episode was like that final scene.
Right.
Because I think she's genuinely great in a couple of those scenes when she drops the little kid voice. But the rest of it is her doing the kid voice and dropping little catchphrases and just being annoying.
Yeah, that's why, I mean, we still have a couple people to go here, but that's ultimately why I struggled with the final score that I gave with this. It's like, man, I don't like this voice, but she's doing exactly what she was asked to do and doing so in a really good way. Like, how do I score this in a way that is like, I don't know. Because am I grading her acting or am I grading the characterization that they chose to do? What am I grading here? Because I probably should be giving the score according to the acting, but it's hard to separate that from the actual character itself because the character is so annoying and that voice is so annoying. So yeah, I definitely struggled with that. I'm with you though. I think the little bits that we get of her in that dramatic piece of her pulling that facade off, especially when she does get to that moment and she puts her hand on the mirror and she sees herself. And again, we talked about our problems with the plot, but if that had been the story this whole time, that her seeing herself as someone outside of this character, that she wasn't this character that she was playing, that she truly was. An adult woman, that would have been so much more interesting, but we didn't get that. We got 85% of Tiny Toon's voice like for the entire episode. So yeah, I'm with you. There's some great stuff in there. It's just unfortunately masked under this goofy voice that she was putting on to be annoying.
Yeah, it's a shame. As we've kind of alluded to, she does come back in the new Batman Adventures in a pretty memorable episode, and unfortunately recast there. Like, I would have loved to have had a full episode of her as herself. I mean, I think she still does the voice a little bit in that episode too, but like not to the degree in this episode. So yeah, would have been nice to hear her get to kind of stretch her legs a little bit more as. I don't know if it's her real voice, but her non little baby talk voice would have been interesting to hear that. But I guess we'll just never know. But we'll round out our voice cast chat. We have, of course, as mentioned, have the late Kevin Conroy as Batman doing, he doesn't have a lot to do in this episode. He's got some exposition to dump. And then he does, like we said, he gets those kind of final moments in the episode sort of calling out to her. But I think as we've sort of alluded to all throughout the episode, Lauren Lester as Robin, the real star of this episode, he's us. Like he's you. Like he hates his voice in this episode. He's so like the first thing he says is like, oh, I watched this show when I was a kid. It still stinks.
Right.
And then, he's making fun of her, like she's playing Hamlet or whatever, and he's making fun of that. And then when the line that when he's in the Batcave where Batman asks him, like, how's your research coming? And he tells the story about, he's like, remember that time we almost got killed by poison ivy? This is way worse.
Yeah,
he's so funny in this episode is Lauren Lester.
Yeah, he's really good. He's deadpan. He's not quite, like, he's not given quips the entire time, right? So he actually gets to be a little bit more dry and sarcastic in the way that he's delivering. He's almost playing like the Alfred role, like we would typically see where Alfred would play the droll, dry, you know, sarcasm. So yeah, he does that very well. He was my spirit animal for this entire episode. So kudos to Mr. Lester. He brought my score up by a point.
Absolutely. So yeah, if I didn't say my final score was also a 6 out of 10 for voice acting. Like I said, I think there's some really good stuff in this episode, and like we said, all the homage voice actors they brought in from old sitcoms is a really cool idea. And again, even like I said, Miss LaPlaca's performance, I don't think she's doing a bad job with what was asked of her. As we often say, it's just don't really care for how the character what was called upon her. Like I said, I think she's great in those quieter moments when she's speaking in her real voice, but those are unfortunately they are few and far between.
Yep, I gave it the same exact score, 6 out of 10, if I did not mention it. But yeah, it's unfortunately more of an indictment that we didn't get to see or hear. I guess that does go back to plot. Like, if the plot had been better, in my opinion, if the plot had been better, then we would have gotten perhaps more of her serious voice and less of the cartoony, goofy voice. I guess we also have to draw back to the fact that this is a kid's cartoon, and maybe this is funny and cute for a kid. I don't know.
I wondered if it's Who Framed Roger Rabbit, where there's like a baby, and then when the yell cut, the baby like gets up and starts smoking a cigar. And
yeah, that sounds right.
Like, I wonder if that was a little inspiration too. I'm sure, like I said, I don't think you got to twist Paul Dini's arms to write in like any kind of great, like wacky sitcom or animation homages. But I wonder if there was like a specific one that stood out to him.
Well, our goal is to eventually get Paul Dini on the program. So hopefully if he ever listens to this episode, he doesn't hold it again.
But he follows us, so we gotta. We can't say in the tweet that we didn't like the episode. We gotta
tell him to listen to Heart of Ice and listen to how much we enjoyed that episode. But
absolutely,
with all due respect, everyone's
Mixed is Spitulated or a trillion other Paul Dini episodes.
That's right. We've
liked.
Exactly. Not this one. Not our cup of tea. Definitely not my cup of tea. More so than you, though. All right, Liam, let's begin to wrap things up here. So totaling up my scores here, we end up with a 20 out of 40. That's a 50% score, which I'm pretty sure is a failing grade in most school systems these days. Do they give out failing grades anymore? I don't know. I'm not in school. But 20 out of 40 is my final score for this this week's episode. What about you?
Yeah, I guess we differed enough in a few of our categories. We weren't too far off, but I did end up with a final score of a little bit higher of 24 out of 40. Yeah, so getting into rewatchability, as we always do, she does come back.
Mm-hmm.
I think she is a very memorable character for this series, as far as characters that were created for this series. Mm-hmm. And I know it's a weird thing to talk about, because I was thinking about that when we realized this episode was coming up next. This is one of those episodes that like kind of made us want to do the show.
Mm-hmm.
Because as mentioned, as we've told the story numerous times on our podcast and other people's podcasts, that our show kind of was spawned out of us sharing these different like listicles that we would send back and forth to each other, ranking, you know, the top 10 episodes, the top 25 episodes, you know, ranking every episode from best to worst in the whole series around the time of the 25th anniversary of BTOS. And this one's always very high on the list. I think some people even had it as like number two or number one.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember us being like, I feel like we're taking crazy pills.
Right. Yeah.
And again, I don't begrudge anyone. And I, like I said, I get that last couple of minutes where she's, you know, sort of talking about, you know, seeing the real version of herself. Again, that's very relatable, whether you're, you know, someone who's gone through a very dramatic physical transformation, like, you know, like if you're trans, or even if you're just someone that, you know, wishes they were taller or skinnier or better looking. Like, it's a very relatable feeling that she conveys in that final scene. And I feel like everybody's just remembering that final scene, which is, as we've said, really, really good.
Yep.
But the preceding 19 minutes and 30 seconds of this episode are no bueno. Right. So it's worst
unrelated, like, not
right.
You're not telling the same story, so it feels tacked on or like this weird swerve, as
right. We stated. Yeah, like I said, I wish more of the episode was like that wonderful final scene, but as it stands, yeah, I think it's a one thumb up for rewatchability, because it is a very memorable episode of the series and the character comes back. So it's not going to make our short list for episodes we want to revisit in our free time, I think it's safe to say.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, it's definitely memorable. No one can deny that.
It's definitely an episode. No one can deny that. Yeah, I would like to reserve judgment until we I give this a temporary one thumb up. Obviously the character comes back, but I don't know how much of the character's first episode is referenced or if there's a need to know who she is. If you can go into that blind as like figure it out that she's a diminutive person that has this that dresses up like a baby doll, like can you get by with just the Wednesday Addams? Like she's a Wednesday Addams cosplay child, like that's what like I don't know if you get by with that. I don't know.
I was gonna say this is also very much a case I feel of like how the Star Wars prequels affect people of our age. Because when Baby Doll, like Paul Dini will put Baby Doll and stuff in a lot of his scripts now if he's doing a Batman story, including in Batman the Adventures Continue, she's popped up a few times. And I'm always like, hey, it's Baby Doll. That's fun. Like it's fun because it's like, oh, it's a thing I remember from before. But then you go back to the thing and you're like, oh, this isn't very good.
Right. This is Jar Jar Binks. He really is as bad as we thought he was. Like,
oh, yeah. No, this isn't, you know, just because maybe some of the newer stuff wasn't your cup of tea doesn't mean the old stuff was that great either. Just not all of it anyway.
That's right. Yeah. It can definitely affect that. So I reserve judgment. I'll give it a temporary one thumb up. With the right to rescind upon the viewing of Love is a Crock once we get down to that episode down the road. But yeah. All right, Liam, let's begin to wrap things up. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to this week's episode. We would love your support for the podcast. If you enjoyed this episode or other episodes, as we mentioned at the top, you can leave a 5-star review on your favorite podcast app. If you leave one on Apple, that lets you leave a little paragraph or blurb about what you like about the episode. If we see it, it's 5 stars. We will read it on air here. And then we, as we mentioned at the top, we'll send you a little prize if you're here in the United States. So feel free, leave a review this week. That could be yours. It's not much competition. It's only been about one a week. So if that could be you. So go ahead and leave one if you're interested in a little prize. We got our other prizes shipped out already over the last couple of weeks. So thank you to those that have left reviews. Subscribe to us on whatever podcast app. If you listen to us on Spotify, that's a great place to interact with us also. There's an exclusive Spotify poll and a question of the week. Those are two different ways to interact with us if you listen on Spotify. Tell your friends about the show too. If you have friends that like the DCAU or DC animation, or if you're looking to get them into Batman the Animated Series, it's a good intro into that. But subscribe to us on the Pod Tower, as we mentioned, at youtube.com/thePodTower. If you want to support the podcast with your finances, we greatly appreciate those that do that every single month. There is a link in the show notes to support us with a donate option. Buy me and Liam coffee, keep us caffeine fueled every single day of our lives. You can also purchase yourself a hat, shirt, or mug, maybe a sticker if you want to. That's all available on our merch store. That is also linked in the show notes. With Black Friday coming up in a few weeks, I'm sure there's going to be plenty of sales going on, so keep an eye on for those if you're looking to get a shirt or two and best bang for your buck. Liam, we also have our social media at DCAU Review on the website formerly known as Twitter, now X, and Instagram. And we talk about each and every week on those forms of social media what our next episodes will be. But we also, of course, preview them here. So let's talk about what our episode will be next week that we'll be reviewing.
That's right. So next week, I think we're really just going to hit a run of episodes that I feel like are the most memorable to us. just because it feels like those later episodes were much more heavily rotated in the reruns. Maybe because more of them featured Robin, I don't know. But certainly this episode, I think, ranks right up there, as next week we'll be talking about The Lion and this episode, as we'll talk about. And as a trivia note, it was the final episode of the original series to air. So we know this one is way later. This is the last to air, even though it was not actually the last one produced. So excited to see this one. We learn a little bit about Alfred's past and how he came to be, as the story goes.
That's right. The Lion and the Unicorn coming up next week. It is going to be one to remember. This one ends on the bottom of a lot of people's
lists.
So we'll see how that turns out to be true. Yeah, or if I seem to remember us kind of enjoying it as kids. So we'll see. Do these hold up to what our original opinions were or what the popular vote gets? We will see. Can't wait to check that one out with you, Liam. But until then, I'm Cal.
And I'm Liam.
And we will talk to you on the next episode of the DCAU Review.
Bye-bye.